Hey everyone, welcome to episode 106 of the Barebow Project. In this episode, we are talking all about the aim. Myself, Grace, and John really, really diving deep into the subject of aiming barebow, aiming and barebow archery. That's the only way I can put it. But listen, you, if you didn't catch this live, you missed out on winning having the potential to win a Jaeger Archery Products custom grip. So, well, that's okay, because there's more opportunities there. In February, we're giving away Yoast weight and tab. This month, we're giving just in Patreon, though. You have to be a member of Patreon. You got to join it and join as a state member or above to have the ability. We're giving away XS wings. Your choice, your color choice, whatever you want, giving that away. February is a Yoast weight. March, gotta check. March, I don't remember what March was off the top of my head, but I mean, it's just, it's ever evolving. I know April, I'm definitely giving away a riser because that's my birthday month. So, and that's only in Patreon though. You've got to be a member. So it's like $20 a month. You get exclusive content. You get to attend the actual live recordings, talk to the guests. I mean, there's coaching that goes in it if you want. There's access to all the documents, the barebow proficiency checklist, all kinds of stuff. So listen, enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening to me, Banner. If you want the full video version, that's over at Patreon also. All right, peace out. Enjoy the show.
He's en route.
Hell, you're a fireman. With that comment.
Yeah. I see your mustache going there.
It's coming a little bit. You know what? I'm a little older than you, so I got this gray area right here.
A lot older, I can't
get rid of. Trust me, I know.
Is that your age on your shirt there?
Not yet. I got some time yet.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for noticing. There are people in here older than me, just so you know. So be careful you don't offend anyone. JD, number one TP shooter. I love it. Here comes people viewing. Whopping seven, John.
Seven?
Seven already. It's pretty ooh, good, actually.
There's seven in this group right now. That's where they're all. There's nobody else, actually.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, it's the same people that are in the Zoom call. Shut up, Bede. You can be removed, Bede. No smart ass comments from you. It's the same people that are in the group right now that picked it up. That's what happened. We're up to 12, so it's growing quick. Listen, as all of you are coming into this live feed, and I'll probably say it again, I talked to Paul Jaeger a little bit a few hours ago. We decided that we're going to do an impromptu giveaway to anyone who is viewing the live feed. So all you have to do is, one, make sure that you've liked the Jaeger Facebook page and their Instagram page. And all you got to do in the comments of the live feed is put done. So all I need you to do in the comments of the live feed, put done, so that I know that you did that. I am going to double check it. And then you're going to get entered in to win a free grip from Mr. Paul Jaeger from Jaeger Archery Products. And it's going to be a grip of your choice. So kind of in the forefront of barebow for a long time now, and they're growing. So it's an opportunity for you guys to win some free stuff. And before I, on that topic, we also have, I think, gosh, let me put it all together. XS Wings is doing a giveaway to our Patreon people, for the month of January. Everybody that's entered gets an opportunity to do that. So make sure that you, you check out that if you're interested. I think it's XS Wings in January. It's Yoast Archery Products in February, and I can't remember what March is off the top of my head. And then April, I'm giving away a bow, so I'm giving away a riser. Holy crap, we're up to 32 views. What's up with that? So, like, you guys, and we're doing a bow band in January right now for everyone, so check that out as well. So
we must be doing pretty good, because Nick's podcast probably isn't running yet.
That could be. I don't know. I don't know when his runs.
Or maybe his just got done.
But anyways, so topic at hand. Gentlemen, it's nice to see you. Happy New Year. John, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good to see you all.
Got the we're not we haven't caught up to the facial hair of John Demmer, but you know, it's nice to see you got the you actually have the fireman mustache growing in, so it's official. You're definitely comfortable in your new environment, Grayson. I don't know if it's a porn yeah, stash or it's a firefighter stash. What'd you say?
I recently trimmed it, man. It you should have seen it a couple weeks ago.
Are you gonna do firefighter Fenton, the handlebar? Like,
I didn't twist it up at the end. No, oh. No, I'm that's not for me.
Did you shoot with it longer? Is it?
Do
you...
No. Maybe I did. I don't know. I shot a couple times.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No issues.
No issues.
Literally just talk about aiming and some of the details that are associated with it. We've seen posts, we see questions, field questions, and I guess there's a couple trains of thought. Multiple people do it multiple ways. You two have some significant differences in location, but probably similar in process. So Grayson, let's start with you. And can you just talk through what your sight picture, your aiming picture looks like and why you do it that way?
All right. So I start my shot with like a what I would call a pre-draw, where I'll just put the point exactly where I want it. I'll draw the bow back and the point stays pretty much right there. I'm fortunate at this point. I don't really get locked off target or unable to get on target just because I don't use that as a cue to shoot the arrow. So aiming is actually easiest for me on a three spot, because shooting a 23 diameter arrow, it'll pretty much cover that whole spot. And I can just kind of line the arrow up with the spot. And most of the time, if I'm in shape, it'll sit right there really still. And I'll leave it. I'll kind of put it towards the back of my mind. You know, I won't hard like aim or think about it, and then I'll run through the rest of the shot. Early on, I used to lollipop, like, you know, kind of make a figure eight, because that's what I'd heard a lot of people talk about. But I like lining the circles up, if that makes sense. I don't like the contrasting lines. It works easier for me. I have pretty decent eyesight, so I can see the rings, the black lines in the rings. So I can line those up. And it's just a nice visual picture for me.
Interesting. You said about the figure eight. So you don't see any kind of a figure eight movement with just being on the gold?
So figure eight, I was talking about the curve of the arrow shaft versus the curve of the gold.
Yeah.
I don't see any figure eight in aiming. I mean, it'll move a little bit, but it's not. And there's no pattern to it. I mean, it just barely moves outside of where I want it. I mean, it's pretty steady, I would say.
Okay.
I mean, it moves a little, especially right now. It's moving more than it used to, but it doesn't wander out to the black or the white. I mean, it's pretty much, you know, it might wander out like a line, like from the seven, it might go out to the six on either side, but then it'll come right back.
Okay. And just to identify, that's not necessarily going to be seen for everybody. If they shoot a smaller arrow, it's going to be a lot smaller. It's not going to be that wide.
True. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I've shot some the RZs, and they're a thinner diameter. So I actually aim a little lower. I won't use the whole red and the blue. I'll bring it down. I think maybe it's the eight. It's been a while. I can't really remember. But yeah, I mean, that definitely the arrow is smaller, so it changed the aim a little bit. But you know, after a couple shots, I'm used to it.
Okay. All right.
If you shoot a VAP, I mean, I don't even know. It's been a while since I've shot one at a feet of target. So maybe it's just outside the gold. John, do you know? Like a 166.
Yeah, I think it's like right in the like eight ring.
Yeah.
And then my nanos were
just on the 9 ring. I think my RZs were right on the 8 ring. And then, or 7-8 ring. And like, yeah, like you, the 23s were right on the 7 ring for me, or the 6 ring.
Yep.
John,
yeah, the 23s work really well for me with that. If I shoot a VAP, it's easier to fall into a hole of holding it exactly on the arrow, like a 166, any like a nano or anything small like that. It's easy to fall into the trap of I have to hold this thing on the yellow, and you focus more on the precise aiming than you should, which will lead you down a path you don't want to go.
We'll probably end up talking about that a little bit, because I know there's some, that's some common struggles that people deal with. John, you started kind of talking about arrow size. So why don't you get into where you aim and why you aim the way you do?
I grew up shooting like guns. So we never aimed on our target, like when we were paper shooting, because it would just litter the center. And then our center would get distorted when we're trying to aim with the crosshairs. So I bring that down. I shoot the exact opposite way of Grayson, only in that manner of where we put the arrow. So for me, circle to a circle, it's more aesthetically pleasing to my eyes, just because I think probably that's how I grew up shooting rifle. We would line up like a crosshair to like a lot of the paper targets, we'd have like a little tiny box in the target, but the box would be down below the center. And so we'd aim it, and just, I don't know, from years of visually looking at that, I think that's probably why I do it. Mm-hmm. But same thing with Grayson. It depends on arrow size, depends on how I line up the circles to a circle. Right now I'm shooting 6.5 millimeter arrows, and it's kind of an odd size. I'm hoping I get some 6 millimeters in, and that'll be more like an RZ. And then I could probably line it up on the red. Mine's kind of, it's not quite a 23 diameter. It's more like a 21 and a half, 22, somewhere on there. So it's kind of weird. I leak into like edge of the, like in the blue, and the blue on both sides, but not quite all the way to the blue. That's usually just the way I aim. Cause I can line up a circle on a circle. It's starting to get a little bit harder for me. I might eventually try to go with the way Grayson aims and cover up the whole target. And then, you know, if I could cover up the whole target, then I know it's like right in the middle. And that might work better on like certain lighting conditions where I don't have to worry about the shimmer of the arrow kind of pulling my arrow to the left or to the right on impact due to lighting. So that's one benefit that Grayson has in his aiming. He doesn't have to get distracted by like the glistening. Like if we have a light over here, it's going to really shine bright on this side of the arrow and make your eyes want to center that glowing part of the arrow instead of the top of the arrow.
Hmm. That's a very, very good point. That the whole different lighting changing, and I guess it sort of changes the perspective of the top of the arrow. I don't know if I ever put, we never talked about it before, and never put two and two together.
Well, it happens in the compound world and in the Olympic recurve world all the time. Like they're your bows, you'll tend to want to shoot towards the sun. So like if you got a sunrise to your left in the morning, you're going to shoot on the left. And as the sun comes up and goes over, your arrow is going to naturally drift a little bit impact on the target. Because it's the same thing with them, is the sun is pulling on the one side. So it kind of like distorts your vision a little bit and wants to suck that arrow over towards the light.
That's a very good point. Would you say that aiming with a fat arrow, specifically a 23, we'll say, and covering up the gold like that from 8 to 8, 7 to 7, whatever, is sort of similar to shoot like a black dot on a scope where you're covering it, so you're almost shooting, you're aiming for like, you're not seeing the gold at all? Was this kind of the same analogy for those that shot compound or shoot compound and may listen to this and are trying to carry over, instead of shooting like a vertical pin, you know what I mean? Just think it's kind of similar carryover.
Maybe in in a way. I mean, I can still see the gold, like the
Oh,
arrows
okay.
blurry over the gold.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, and maybe it's sort of similar, but it's not exactly like I'm blacking out the gold or from six to six ring.
Right. So you do, if you could visualize or say it in a way that people can visualize it, Grayson, what part of the gold do you see? Just the top, a little bit of the top crown? Or like, are you putting the top of the arrow, the 12 o'clock of the circumference of the arrow, up to the top of the nine ring? Or where approximately are you putting it?
So the best way to describe it is like a three spot target. That's where I shoot my best scores in practice. I'll put the crown of the arrow, the crown of the circle of the whole target.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
On
Okay.
the blue, on top of the blue.
On the
Top
top of the blue.
of
Yeah.
the blue. Okay.
Yep.
And then
And I mean
that's
that
going to
like
change. Okay.
it kind of falls apart at the bottom, but the top, like I would say the top half of the arrow almost fits pretty perfectly with that circle.
Interesting. Guess that would make your crawl a little bit shorter too, in some
A
ways.
little bit, yeah.
And that's a good thing.
I would
Okay.
say when I shoot 50 meters, 166 arrow is, top of the gold. I'll do the same thing with the gold.
Okay. Good. John, your lollipop, as some people hate the term, your lollipop, does it sit right at the bottom of the gold? Or, well, let's hypothetically say that's where you're aiming, because you said your aerodynamic might change things a little bit. Does it float left and right a little bit, what would be into the red, but only to like the edge of the nine? Does you float that little bit left and right, or do you pretty much stay right at the bottom?
If I'm strong that day and I've got a lot of time behind the string, if you're talking about the exact top of the arrow, I used to be able to keep it within the 10 ring 95% of the time.
That's
That
crazy.
would be my float. Like right now I'm probably edge of the nine to edge of the nine, probably 95% of the time.
Okay. I bet you 98% of the people that shoot bare bow have never experienced that. I think there's a lot of people that really have a hard time holding in the middle. And that's probably what we really need to dive down that. And believe it or not, we're up to 48 people watching this right now, which might be a record. I don't know.
Wow, life goals
Yeah,
reached.
life goals. Yeah. All right. So well, have you always been able to hold that way, with exceptions to maybe poundage or physical injury or just getting older and your eyes start to kind of change a little bit? Have you always just been able to aim that way, John?
Yeah.
Okay. Chip Grayson, same for you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Have either of you ever had experiences of getting locked off in any way, shape, or form, or have a response to people who do get locked off the gold? They can't get to the middle. They can get the full draw, but they get stuck somewhere. Have either of you ever experienced that in any way, shape, or form?
I have, yeah. I mean,
Okay.
this was 100 years ago in an IBO tournament. I shot with a longbow.
Okay.
Couldn't tell you which one it was. I shot a couple of them, but yeah, I mean, I was shooting pretty well for me at the time. And I don't know, as soon as I got to the range, like the actual course we were shooting, I could not hold on the target. I would raise up to like the top of the animal's back every time, no matter what it was. And I was like, man, what in the hell is going on? I mean, I struggled through it. It was awful. I mean, I'm sure people experience it every day, and it was pretty terrible. But the problem was I was using, the arrows in the right spot. I need to let this go. That was my, kind of cue or trigger or whatever you want to say to shoot. And I mean, I guess I had target panic really bad. I mean, I still do have target panic, but I didn't know how to manage it back then. So after that, I think that was probably the summer before the first classic. I started using a clicker. And that really helped me to separate the sight picture from the actual execution of the shot. And for me, the clicker really helped. But after I took the clicker off, I, you know, kind of kept the same, I don't know how to say it, same mindset maybe. Like, okay, the sight picture's where it needs to be, but I still have something else to do, which is pull through the shot. And that's how I do it. I mean, it sounds simple. I know it's easier said than done, but that's how I do it. Put it where it needs to be, forget about it, and start pulling through the shot. And when I have the right feel, you know, with really, it's kind of a feel on my fingers and in my back that, I know this thing's ready to go. I don't know if that helps anybody, but that's how it works for me.
No, that's good. John, I know you said you never really experienced that, but I know you've talked to or in some capacity worked with enough shooters that have. What's your best words of advice for people who get that locked off bottom? Because I know, like, if you say you get locked off the middle and then you go and start speaking from experience, and say you go to a lollipop and you're really not in a good place, you'll end up getting locked off of that spot too. What would you say is your recommended approach to try to handling that or changing that? It could be just what Grayson did, or do you have other things that you would recommend?
I get locked off once in a blue moon, but it's because it's not my trigger, you know, it's not my my finished, you know, step of my shot. So it's just like what Grayson said, it's just a step, it's just one step in in a bunch of steps, but it's not the end. So if I get locked off now, it's maybe one out of 60, one out of 100 arrows. It's because I'm too tense. Nothing to do with I want to get that arrow off. It's just I'm just too tense. So I stop, you know, let down and then relax and then try to get to full draw and anchor and just feel nice and relaxed. So that's the only time I get locked off now. But most of the people, it's just they get caught into get it, and whenever it gets close to the gold, you know, that's their time to shoot the arrow, because we all want that desired shot of, you know, the timing of letting go when it's perfectly in the middle, and then it just keeps steamrolling downhill to a bad path where now you're anticipating getting there, and now you can't get there, so you're going to quick flinch it in there, or you move on to the next step. Well, I'm just going to hold gold all the time and not move it, but if you never like separate the shot, like the actual execution, the finish execution from the aim, then you're going to start short drawing and you're not going to hit anchor and you're going to let go before you even get to anchor. I have a good friend that does that from time to time, and it sucks because
he does
just too stubborn to actually aim and then move off of the aim and then move on to the next part of your shot. Taking that, like, everything has like an intensity level. You know, your grip in the beginning is a super intense level. You got to get it just right. Then you move on. Now that's no longer an intense aspect of your shot because you already got it done. Then you move on to your grip on your string. Okay, now you're very intimate on that. It's very intense. Okay, you got it right. Okay, now we're right. Now we move on to the next stuff. So when you get the full anchor, this is no longer intense. This is no longer intense. And same thing with the aim. When you're aiming, it's intense at first until you get it there, and then you move on to the next. And now it's just like it drops on the intensity level. Now you're shooting through it, and it's no longer dominant in your shot. And that's the people get hung up on. That's the end goal, is get it to the middle and pound it.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. You accomplish one task, make sure it's right, and then you move on to the next. I mean, I'm not perfect. Occasionally in a tournament, I will, you know, maybe once or twice in the tournament, it'll look perfect. And I'll just be like, let me let this son of a bitch go. And I do. And I'm like, man, that was dumb. So the next time I'll make sure I come up and execute a perfect shot. I won't let myself, you know, snowball and fall down into that hole. But I mean, it happens to me occasionally. You just have to be disciplined and really run through each part of your shot.
And I think that's very important that you're not everybody's going to, nobody's capable of running 100%.
No,
it's not possible. We just try to run it the best we can, But just if your goal is to run 100% every time, you're probably going to fail every time.
Okay. I know Amber, who's actually in this live feed right now, had talked about, and she had a similar situation that Eric Yost has, where she can aim all day long and but can't make the connection to letting go. Any idea, like what you just talked about either the aim being the last step or being too intense? If the aim is too intense, like it's too not allowing yourself to move on. And it kind of struck me for a second, and maybe you won't agree or maybe you will agree. Is that possibly an issue for somebody like that, where they can get to the middle, no problem, and they'll stay there, but they can't make the connection on how do I move on from this? You know, you think that that's might be cause it, the cause of that issue is you're so focused on getting to that aim, you're not letting go of the aim then after that, and then moving on to those future steps. Like, I think, how do you describe that next step? How do you describe moving on then from the aim and then finishing the rest of the shot? Either one of you can focus on that race. And I've heard you talk about it before, in some capacity, but.
I mean, I don't know if I really have an answer for this that's going to help anybody, but it's just the same thing. You know, you have all these steps in your shot, you accomplish them. And at the end for me, you know, after I've aimed, I'm pulling, I feel the tension on my fingers and in my back. And at that point, I know I can let it go. Like I can just dump the string and let it go. You know, as long as I feel like I'm pulling straight back, my mind is free to let this thing go. Sometimes the arrow is not exactly centered on the target, but I try not to get too caught up in that. I mean, normally, you know, if I execute a good shot and I'm not in the center, it'll still hit a nine, you know, maybe edge of the nine. So yeah, as long as I have that feeling I'm looking for, I'm just free to let it go. I've never had the problem where I couldn't let myself let go of the string. I don't have any experience with that. So I'm sorry, I can't really provide any more insight.
No, I think you're, both of you, your comments about kind of allowing yourself to move on once you get it done, but realizing that that's not the end, like knowing that's not the end of the shot. You have to be able to move on to something else. I think one time before we talked about, and you talked about using string blur later, a little later on, like you might get it to the middle and it's just there, and you might finalize that string blur as a thing that you can use to move on to another step or something like that. John, what are your thoughts on that? Like that idea of you can get to the middle, you just can't make the connection to letting go.
People need to realize that a well-executed shot with a slightly subpar aim will almost always outscore a well-aimed shot, but a poor executed release.
100% agree. Don't focus too much on the aim. The execution is much more important.
Yeah, your body.
Especially over time. I mean, you might get a lucky shot here and there, but over time, over the course of a tournament round, execution is going to win over aiming for me every time.
Yeah, and your body will naturally adjust a lot of times if you're looking at the middle or however you're looking at it, and you just, you know, focus on making just a great, well-executed shot, like you're posing for a camera or whatever, your body's gonna try to naturally correct if your eyes are picking it up off center. A lot of times, like the high-end Olympians will tell you, like, oh, that broke in a nine ring, but they hit the 10 or hit the X, because their body will just naturally do some like quick movements uncontrolled by you that will try to bring it right back into the middle. So if you can buy into that your body's going to do that for you more times than it's not, you're going to outscore whatever you can if you're just intensely aiming. And I think AJ brought up it's the muscle memory. So for her, she's having an issue with muscle memory. So so like something like that, I would suggest hit the, you know, blind bail or whatever you want to do. I would go blind bail and then transition it into a target bail. But you're going to need that repetitive nature of what the end of your shot should feel like when you get it to anchor and however you're going to follow through. You need to get that ingrained on how that feels so you can assess at a tournament if it's failing you or not, and then you can fix it.
It's really good information, guys.
It sounds like she does not have that muscle memory on what a good ending of a shot should feel like yet.
Well, to be fair to her, she's only been shooting barebow about 2 or 3 months, and she's a former compound shooter. So, you know, there's not, she's a coach. She's a level 3 coach. She definitely has some knowledge base and stuff like that. So I think it'll come to her, but it was something that she's been struggling with. You know, volume matters. And when you're a new shooter like that, volume matters. You really have to kind of do it right a whole bunch of times to get it out. So that's good. There's a question in our comments on Zoom, and I want to talk to it in regards to alignment and aiming. You guys can respond to this however you feel necessary. Is where are you finishing your alignment in relationship to your aim? Would you say? When is your alignment done?
I'm not even aiming when my alignment's finished.
Okay.
I don't move on to the aim until the alignment's done.
Okay. Grayson?
I would say the same.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, the feel at full draw has to be there before I'm going to focus on where the arrow tip's at. I mean, what does it matter where the arrow's at if
your alignment's
form is not? Yeah.
I think maybe that discussion of like the feeling in your back and the tension on your fingers, some people may associate that those words with alignment, but it's really not. That's a separate thing that's happening.
Yep.
Alignment is done before the aim even starts. I think most people would, most high-end shooters of all disciplines would probably say the same thing. Joy, I hope that kind of hits what you're getting at. Maybe at the end, once we're not live, we can talk about it a little bit. Also, string blur. There's a question in regards to string blur as well. You guys can't see it because it's a direct message. I apologize because you guys are in Zoom also. What about alignment to string blur? Are you checking your string blur? First of all, why don't you both, in relationship to your when, the timeline of when you're aiming, how often are you checking string blur and where are you checking your string blur in relationship to the aim? Grayson, you start.
Typically, it'll be after I guess, focus on where the tip is on the target, and I'll check the string blur. And I try to forget about it after that. But if the shot's taking a long time, I'll run back through those things again. I don't know how to say it. I try not to focus too much on the aim.
You kind of lagged there for a second. Say it again.
Sorry. Make sure it's the same as aiming. I don't try to focus on it too much. It's just one thing. Make sure the arrow's where it needs to be on the target. Then check the string blur and then move on.
All right. Is that every single arrow or only when you feel like you need to put a check on it?
Every single arrow. I don't know how people shoot without checking on it. That's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, do you look where your point's at every time? Do you make sure you aim at the target every time? Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Same string blur. I get it. Where is your string blur also? Is it right on the riser, just outside the riser, inside the riser, next to the arrow? Where's it at?
I'll do everything I can to make the string blur right next to the arrow. Line it up right along the right-hand side of the arrow. Also, if I can't do that, I'll line it up dead center with the riser because the string normally fits pretty well on the riser for me. But yeah, I like to line it up right along the arrow. It's easy. It's like right down, you know, the arrow where I'm looking. So I don't have to glance off, you know, kind of to the side to find it. So it's just easier for me to keep it in check. The closer everything is together, the easier it is for me. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. John, how about you? Can you respond to that?
I reach anchor, get the alignment down, and then I just quick look at the string blur and then go right to aiming. I put it on the edge of the left edge of the riser.
Left edge of the riser. Okay. Do you
see how he like pointed off to the side and then down the arrow? Like, yeah. I don't like to do that. I like to just be, all right, string blur, arrow, same spot. It just works better for me. The closer they are, the easier it is.
I get it. It's going to be different for everyone, but like we were talking before we went live, I said there's a lot of people out there that take advice from people who aren't really actively shooting barebow or haven't done it at very high levels in a consistent manner like you two have. And that's why I think it's important for people to sort of think like, okay, what do some of the most consistent shooters do and what parts of that can I possibly implement into my shot process? You two have contrasting things that you do, but you've both been very, very, very consistent. And that's what we're, you know, so I want people to realize like there's not just John's way. There's not just Grayson's way. There's other people out there too that shoot real, real well. Maybe not quite as consistent, but damn close. And, you know, it could just be some natural talent, could be some youthfulness, could be a whatever. But, you know, people need to know, like, this is stuff we've never really dove this deep into details of these topics. It's always like a casual glass over of, oh, well, how do you aim? And then you move on because we're talking about something else. And I wanted to try to break down all of these things. So
I wouldn't say that we have that much of a contrasting way of shooting. Everything's pretty similar, except for the small little details of, you know, just a couple of things. It's pretty, if you ran everything down the line, we're pretty close to running everything really close, just a couple small things.
Yeah, like the string blur, like just where the point of the arrow is. That's all I was really referencing. But yeah, no, you're right. You're 100% right. So is there anything else before I'm going to get into some of the comments and not on the live feed, but on a previous post just about like what people struggle with. Is there anything else about aiming or some of the stuff we've talked about that you guys want to hit on before we just kind of look at some of the problems that some people are identifying and see if we can maybe help them? Anything specific you want to mention? He's ready to move on. You good?
I mean, I'll say one more time. I think it's been said a million times. People focus way too much on the aim and they use it as their, okay, it's time to shoot. Do some drills. Really focus on not using that as your cue to shoot. I think that would benefit most barebow shooters. I mean, it seems like a lot of people get locked off target or can't get it to the center. So don't use that as your final, okay, I'm shooting this arrow. I would say most people I've seen, that's their problem.
Yeah. Yeah, like a drive-by type of thing too. You know, it never really stops, it just keeps moving.
Yeah, well, it usually doesn't start there. Like, it doesn't usually start with the drive-by. That's usually a product down the road. Drive-by.
You can't get the arrow, or you can't get the arrow to the target. You're like, all right, I have to force it there. And as you're forcing it up, you're like, all right, I'm there, and you let it go as you're going by it.
Right. Good.
Man, I remember that vividly at that IBO shoot I was talking about. I would be high, and I would just be dropping my arm down to try to get it to the center. It was like one of the
triple crowns. I can't remember which one that was, but
I shot it with you, right?
I was there for a couple of years.
Paul and maybe Mark, I don't know.
Yeah. But,
man, it was awful.
Mr. David Wallace whooped your butt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean everybody cleaned my
butt. The dude that aims 30 inches below the target.
Good for him.
So I want to get into some of the problems that were asked or the things that they talk about. One of the first ones is over aiming, holding too long. We talked about it already, but I guess like what's the first thing that your go-to response to is somebody that's over aiming? Just move on, learn to move on from it. What do you say?
I mean, I don't know about over aiming. I've kind of moved past that, but holding too long, I'm guilty of it. I'm an idiot too. I'll be like, all right, I can muscle through this. I can do this. And sometimes it'll either end up one or two ways for me. I'll either end up holding too long and I'll start to collapse and I'll shoot a little low, or I'll be like, all right, don't collapse, pull harder and I'll shoot high. Just because I'm stupid, I'm like, all right, I can do this. The key to that is if you think it's been too long, just let it down. Easier said than done, but that's the fix. Simple answer, just let it down. I
Let it
can't
down,
do
start over, do it right.
it. That's the answer to it.
Got you. Good. Anything on that, John? Only holding too long? Do you do that sometimes?
If I'm holding too long, it's usually I'm going into trying to fix a problem. Like I don't usually hold too long when I'm executing a shot. If I'm just being terrible on my aim and I get I start to feel a little flinchy, then I'll just sit there and I'll hold, and it seems like I'm holding too long. But it's like a drill that I'm doing. Like it could be right in the middle of a shoot. It don't matter. But I don't usually hold too long. If it feels like I'm getting to like the 4 second mark or something, it's game over, restart every time.
Okay. So you definitely have like a feeling on each arrow that you know, like, okay, I'm
Yeah,
at the
there's
point
an
of
internal clock.
no return. I'm
You're
let down.
yeah. It's like if my arrow is like sitting here and it's just doing this, okay, I can keep aiming, whatever. But usually if I'm starting to get to the point where I'm too long, it starts going really big. And if I start going really big, then I'll get to that natural tendency of trying to time it, and it's just usually a disaster. So as soon as that my float starts opening up a little bit, it's done. I'm past my peak aim, peak try to shot execution.
Okay, good.
For me, when that happens, I'll put more tension in my bow arm. I can feel it. I'll be able to put the arrow back on the target and hold it there, but there's a lot of tension in my bow arm. Sometimes it works out well, sometimes it's a complete disaster. But I'm stubborn and I'll shoot some of those arrows from time to time.
Okay, all right. And how often do you regret those arrows?
Every single time, even if it's a 10, every single time, because you don't want to.
Yeah.
Oh man, one of the worst things is an arrow that goes where it shouldn't in a good
Yeah.
way. If you don't want that, it's not the reinforcement you need. If you
Yeah.
get away with something, you're like, all right, man, I can do that again. You don't want to do that again.
Yeah. That's such good advice. While we're on the like the holding, because this is actually John Lewis's comment, and
Who's that?
he asked in the comments, he said, how close to shot clock cutoff, this is outside of aiming, but how close to shot clock cutoff will you still let down? I think that's probably happens a very small percentage of the time, but it could. Do you have like a cutoff, like you're like, all right, I just need to just fire this thing? Or I think Grayson, I think you've let down on the shot clock on the stage at the Classic before, if I remember. I don't know. No, that was John. Maybe it's both of you. I don't know.
John, yeah, I don't know if I
No,
did.
it was you or not. So what's your cutoff? What's your like second count that you know, like I can still get this, I can still let down, draw back, and get this thing to go. Do you or don't you really have one? You just go off a feel. I don't know.
So I'm a slow shooter. If I don't have, I mean, I could probably do it in 15 seconds, but I'll feel rushed. I always feel rushed when I'm on the like the stage, like those type of clocks, 20 seconds. Even though it's plenty of time, I haven't practiced it enough to feel comfortable. So I'll always feel rushed if I only have 15, 20 seconds. But you know, if things were going haywire and I had 20 seconds left, I would let down and try again.
John, do you have a cutoff?
If we have a 30-second shot clock, I can let down no problem once every time. 20 seconds is a little bit different. If I have that thing in the back of my head saying this could be a disaster, then I will let down and immediately draw back again. 20 seconds is not a lot of time to run through a shot, not shoot, let down, and run through another shot. You have to start your shot almost in the beginning of that 20 seconds. If you sit there and dilly daddle for 5 seconds, you're probably not going to be able to let down and shoot a well executed shot. You're going to be really rushed. So the only time I let down is if on a 20 second clock is if I think this is going to be really bad, like I'm going to be 7-6 ring. I will quick restart, hit anchor, and then I'll take a quick peek at the clock as I'm letting down to see where I'm at. I got about 7 seconds to run a non-rushed shot.
I take a little longer to shoot, so 7 seconds would just not be enough for me. Well, my biggest weakness, I guess I would say, competing is shooting on a clock. I've shot, some of my best arrows, you know, in head-to-heads. The last indoor final I shot, I was hammering away. But when you put me on the clock, I'm not used to it, and I'll just rush, and I won't get into my shot the way I should. The pressure's similar, I would say. You know, you're going up against John or Winker, you know, whoever. There's a lot of pressure either way, but I think it's the clock that gets me. That's something I need to practice.
Okay, good. It's nice to hear you guys, you know, like weaknesses, you know, you're going to work on.
I'm not going to work on it. I probably should.
You can go down to that shooting range that you have in your house, put a projector up with the classic running on a screen. You could just shoot against yourself, whistle for whistle, or whoever else you want to shoot against. Just go off the clock.
You want to feel really good about yourself, shoot against Frank.
Yeah, or you could do that. Actually, you'd win hands down because I shoot zeros right now. Shoot. Forget it. I'm not going to say anything. Next one. And guys, just sort of respond however you feel is appropriate. Justin Isbell says, rushing shots, this is a hit in reference to having a problem or something they struggle with. Rushing shots or forcing shots when I have great sight picture instead of just trusting the process. How do you feel about that? Like rushing shots.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do that. I mean, that'll lead you down a path you don't want to go. Just that's exactly what we're talking about. The sight picture looks good. So you're like, let this go. That's how you end up not being able to hold on the target, in my opinion. Do not. Do that.
You're when you're doing that, you're succumbing to the sight picture shot.
And you might have some really good shots like that. And that's what I'm saying, that reinforcement that you don't need. You're like, all right, I'm on the goal. Let it go. I do it a time or two around maybe, but you don't want to do that because if you do it once, it'll end up snowballing into a serious problem where you can't hold on the gold because as soon as you get there, you're like, all right, I got to let it go. And it just ends up speeding itself up over time. Not good.
Okay. Good.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think your tempo is just as important to work on than as everything else. You should know what tempo you live in. So you don't get rushed or you don't like overextend it to like five, you know, if your tempo is like 3 to 5 seconds for a shot, like when you get back and hit anchor, then you have that feeling of that's where you should be in. That's where your zone should be in. And then once you get past that 5 seconds, that should like, there should be a trigger inside your brain saying, okay, now my average score, if I live in this 3 to 5 seconds is like, whatever, like say it's a 9.0. When you veer out of that 5 seconds, now it's going to start dropping down to like 8.7, 8.5, 8. And the longer you wait, that your average arrow is going to keep dipping, dipping, dipping. Same thing in the beginning of that. You're before 3 seconds. Like you might be pushed to 9, but you're going to start doing what Grayson said. You're going to get faster and faster and faster. And then now that nine is going to be dipping back down the other way too.
Oh, yeah. Good. Very good. Kevin Jensen says, biggest challenge is minimizing or trying to minimize movement prior to the shot breaking. You guys got a response for that or a way to navigate that situation?
What's this question or statement?
His biggest challenge is minimizing or trying to minimize movement prior to the shot breaking. So
he has a large float, or is he saying flinches because he's on the gold and
he aims bottom of the yellow. So I don't know if that's where he's stuck at or if that's where he's aiming at. It's just a comment with talking about what a challenge is. So I guess you probably need some more information on that to give.
I would say it could fall one or two ways. Like it's kind of a target panic issue where he's maybe flinching, or he feels like he's not holding as still as he wants to. And some of that is just strength or talent or bow setup. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that could go, and I would say.
Yeah. Kevin, he says in the comments, so he's in the comments in the live feed right now. He says he's trying to control the float. I think we talked about that already a little bit.
He's trying to put too much.
Trying emphasis. To hold it really still, yeah. Is where it was.
Like I mean, I'll do that from time to time, but it's not good. It's not desirable. You kind of just want to set it there and let it flow, so to speak. If you try to control it, put too much tension, it might work a time or two, but over the course of 60 arrows, it's not going to lead to the best result.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the more you try to force the float and try to force it smaller and smaller, the more tension you're building up in your shot, something's going to give. A lot of times it's your release. It gets real plucky. It starts going in all sorts of different directions because you're trying so hard with this hand that you forget about this hand doing what it's supposed to be doing. And so since this is tense, this gets tense, and then it just, I mean, your scores will start dropping pretty bad.
Yeah. Good. We're going to go to another one. Roy Eason says, struggle getting the arrow to settle without having drive-bys or flinches. I know the aim doesn't need to be perfect and it will have an amount of float. So he's having the drive-by. He can't settle it he's not settling it. He's having drive-bys or it gets to the middle and it's a flinch and it's gone.
That's what this whole thing was
whole
about.
Thing is about, yeah, yeah, it really, yeah. Is, I guess. Yeah.
So I would say he probably, I don't know if he can even remember, but it probably started with I'm on the gold, let me shoot, and evolved into the drive by.
Mm-hmm.
So like we've been saying the whole time, don't let the aim be your precursor to letting the arrow go. I know it's so much easier said than done. I don't know how many times, you know, we could say it. It's hard to do. I mean, if it was easy, I'm sure we would all do it, and we can't do it every time either, but work on a blank bail, not really a blank bail. I guess just a bail with a target, always aim, but try to start up close and run through your shot, aim at a small dot. Or what I like to do is use an old arrow hole in the target and aim at that. And, you know, up close, maybe 3 to 5 feet, something really close where you don't really care where the arrow impacts. But you aim and then you run through the rest of your shot. That, I don't know. It's hard to really describe how to fix it because there's only one way to do it, really. And you just have to do it, but it's easier said than done. I feel like an idiot saying that, but I don't know what to say.
No, man, I think I think you would make an excellent coach or like be able to teach people because you actually go into very specific detail about, and you're good at explaining it. You say, oh, I don't know if it sounds right, but in reality, like you're just describing it as it is. And that's okay. You would make a very, very, very good archery coach. That's all I gotta say. That's my opinion. All right, moving on. Paul McCullough says, in a bad shot or bad release, I feel like I know it. It as soon as the arrow leaves, and I need to let down more when it doesn't feel right. Maybe you kind of answered your own question, Paul. But you can't have a bad shot before releasing it. So if something's bad before that, yeah, I think you kind of answer your own question. Do you guys want to just comment on the idea of when to let down, when not to let down? Because that's what Paul's dealing with a little bit.
For me, if you even think you should let down, you should let down. If it even crosses your mind, if something's not running right, you should let down. Do I let down every time that happens? Absolutely not, but I should.
Okay.
That, and anytime your mind wanders off of something that you're supposed to be doing. So if you got step 1 through 10 and you go 1, 2, 3, 7, boom, you got to start over. Mm-hmm. And anytime you wander off of your normal shot routine, start over.
If you're somebody that gets stuck off the middle and you're would in practice, and say you get stuck in practice, do you think they should just let down right away? In practice, like if you're specifically working on holding in the middle, you can't get to the middle. Do you think that your mind already is in the wrong place because you're not allowing yourself to get to the middle?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to trying to think. If I were in that situation.
Not a scored situation. It's not a tournament. You're working on being able to get comfortable letting the point of the arrow stay somewhere wherever your aim point is. Middle of the target, lollipop, whatever.
I'll try to break it down. Like, if that were me, if I went down to my basement right now and started to shoot and I got locked off the target, I'd be like, man, what's going on? You know, let me let this down and try again. And I would pull back. And if the same thing happened, I'd let down. You know, maybe try again after that. But if it were a recurring problem for me at this point, I would go to, you know, the bail up close and work on some drills. It's been a while since I've been in that spot. So, yeah, I can't really speak on it any more than that. But if you're getting locked off target, you definitely need to let down. You can't force the aim and run a good shot at the same time, I don't think. Okay. You can't force it back to the middle and then execute a good shot. I mean, unless it's like, all right, it's sitting over here, let me just move it back. If it's sitting over here and you're like, let me get it back, and you can't, just let it down. I mean, that's not going to end well. And if it does end well, it's I don't know, reinforcement you don't need.
Very good. Let's see here. Ken Renas says,
oh boy.
My mind is screaming, hold it a little longer over and over. I guess he means at full draw. When I think that's long enough, I violent jerk and it's gone. There's so many comments there, Ken. But we're going to stay on topic. So he's when he's holding it, he's constantly like mentally, that's part of the problem because he's mentally screaming, hold it, hold it, hold it, instead of walking through the process. What do you guys think? What's your response to that?
Sean, you go ahead.
And in the mind of Ken.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot to be. Love you, Ken.
So he's holding, 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 and then when he finally decides to let go, he jerks it.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
That's the way it reads, yeah.
So it sounds like he's too focused on the aim. And when you're too focused and you can't like go from intense aiming, if you're intense aiming all the time, this can't function the way it's properly supposed to. Because if you're too intense on that, everything is going to be numb. Everything is going to like drop down on the execution level. This is going to get, it could do whatever it wants. Like it might be like, okay, I got to let it go, got to let it go. And then you just rip it through your fingers, or you're too intense aiming and then you just like boom, you come out instead of nice and straight back. So it sounds like, I've had this conversation before,
I know,
that intensity of the aim has to like just completely diminish. and you're going from like say 100% hardcore until you achieve aim. Now you have to back it down to like 10, and then all of a sudden now your shot execution intensifies to like a 90, where you're like, okay, we're just gonna run this shot the best we can. And you know, that it sounds like he's still stuck on like high intense aiming.
Yeah, my question back to him would be, why do you feel like you need to hold it longer? What's going on? Where are you at in your shot process that you're thinking, hold? Why do you need to do that?
Yeah, so Ken commented on the live feed and said, aim is easy, but I'm trying to hold it to settle and avoid sight picture shooting. So getting it to the middle is easy. And Ken, I'm deciphering this. It's tough. It's not always, you know, it's not always clear. You get it to the middle easy, but you're trying to really let it settle small movement, be real still. And I think that maybe that's the carryover to over aiming. And it kind of sounds like it would be. Well, I wanted to say something before Ken commented, John, to you. Do you feel there's a correlation to the from the intensity of your aim to, or maybe this is what you're saying, and just to clear for people, is there a correlation to the intensity of the aim to the intensity of the follow through?
I would say there's a correlation to the intensity of the aim to the quality of your release.
Okay.
So I would break it down to like 100%, right? If you're 100% involved in your aim, your release is probably going to be 0% on execution. If you're 50-50, you know, if you're 50 on the aim, your execution is probably going to be 50% of your peak capability. But if you start dropping that down and you get less intense on your aim and you just sit there and enjoy it, then the quality of your execution just climbs exponentially. And usually the scores correlate to it. You might have a flyer where they might go 8 or 7 ring because your aim wasn't quite there, but the amount of those shots are going to be a lot lower than if you are just in, you know, aiming hardcore.
Got you. Okay.
It's really hard to do both of those things at the same time to peak performance.
I agree.
Okay. Ken just said that what he's trying to get at about aiming easy and trying to let it settle, like he's trying to let his entire body settle. That's what he said, just body settle. So I think I don't know. I know you've talked to Ken, I'm sure, about this because you guys are friends and you guys have all, you know, has maybe this is a better in-person conversation, but I don't know.
Ken's stubborn, man. You can't. Yeah. I love Ken. I do. Yeah. Ken's awesome. But he's got his way of thinking. I think he just gets stuck in it, and it's hard to get out.
Yeah.
Ken knows how to shoot. I think, the last NFAA I shot, he shot higher than anybody there. He knows what to do. He can figure it out. Don't be on here pretending like you don't know how to shoot, dude. You know what's up.
There you go, Ken. That's your answer.
Just don't get stuck in that tunnel vision. I think that's Ken's biggest flaw is he gets stuck on a one track mind, and it's got to be this way. You just gotta be more open to, you know, not like it's like if we explain something, there could be a couple ways of working around it, and not just one. And if that one doesn't work, then you have to work around it in a different, like, take a different angle of approach towards it. Just like aiming, like Grayson was talking about, the way he aims, the way I aim. You know, if aiming a certain way is an issue, don't sit there and keep trying to do that. If it's giving you problems, change it up and aim a slightly different way. Same thing with everything in our shot, you know.
Don't be afraid to change, you know. All right, Sean Moore. I'm not sure if I'm saying Sean's last name right. Starts from below yellow, move up into the gold with arrow covering the entire gold. Biggest issue is avoiding drive-bys or snaps as it gets on target. Lately, I've been releasing low gold 6 for no good reason. Responses. What do you... essentially, he's got either it's either a drive-by, which we talked about is a result of already of something else, or he's stuck low gold and ends up releasing.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that that's essentially what we've been talking about the whole time here. I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, if he were to tell himself, all right, I'm not going to shoot this arrow, I'm just going to aim it, he'd be fine. He'd probably be able to put it on the gold and let it sit there. It's when he goes to shoot, he uses that sight picture as the cue to shoot the arrow. And that's what we've been talking about the whole time. You need to, and it's going to take arrows and arrows. I mean, hundreds, maybe thousands of arrows to ingrain this correctly. Go to the bale, shoot, and find a process that works for you. But the process can't end with sight picture. Sounds simple, but I mean, that's my advice.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it for well over an hour, so there's definitely more to go back. If Sean's not watching now, you can come back and watch it later on. Cindy Graham, Cindy's doing very well. One of our Patreon subscribers, local here in Pennsylvania, really making some improvements. Cindy says, sometimes I will hold at anchor for too long. There's a certain amount of time I should be at anchor before release, and sometimes I talk myself out of releasing. If I'm lucky, we talked about this too, if I'm lucky, a late release will still catch the gold. Probably have a good bow arm on that shot. Otherwise, it heads toward outer red or even in the blue rings. So, again, it's that holding too long thing. And we sort of talked about that. And I don't know if Cindy, I know Cindy's in the live chat on Facebook, but I don't know if Cindy caught that portion of it. So, Cindy, you can go back and check that out. Anything you want to talk about, that holding too long stuff, we kind of talked about. So I don't want to rehash that same stuff. Is there anything you want to add to that, or I think we pretty much covered it?
I think we did. If you think you're holding too long, try to have the discipline to let down. I think that discipline really, like disciplining your shot process, really separates, you know, the top from the middle to the bottom of the pack. I don't want it to sound, you know, too hardcore, but that discipline to run your shot properly. I mean, that's why, you know, John is always at the top, or Robbie or Matt or whoever, they have the discipline to run their shot the way it's supposed to be run. Everybody can't be at the top. You know, we're all at different levels with that, but try to work on that discipline. If you know you're holding too long, just let it down.
Good. Thank you. Force field, my point around, can't tell if this is a, Susan Snyder said, I guess this is in response to like, what's a problem or struggle that you have. Susan said, fear of the gold. It was like there was a force field around it. My point would go around and above it and to the right and then freeze in utter stillness, rock steady somewhere above it. And then I guess she was referring to a specific tournament. So somebody who's getting locked off in multiple directions, you know, again, I think that's something that's probably been talked about or how to respond to that. So, Matt Yaka, holding the bow up to stay in the middle. Is that because of your shoulder, buddy? We know you can keep it in the middle. I think that's pretty much it for this stuff. There was one other question in the social media, so much you understand.
I see a couple here in the Zoom chat.
Yeah, so
a while ago, Morden asked, is aiming picture the same in practice and competition? Yes.
Oh, I missed that.
Should be.
Oh, okay.
Ben
must be a direct message.
It looks like, I don't know, for me it's shown in the meeting chat. Okay. Ben asked, how much does aiming and hold change between targets and 3D outdoor? Aiming for me on 3D targets is a little harder because I don't have something to line it up on. But I will, if the lighting is not terrible, I can still see the rings. So I will try to line it up, you know, the arrow with the 10 ring. But the size of the targets makes that a little difficult to do. If I were to get, I never will. Don't get your hopes up. If I were to ever get serious about 3D, I would have to really play with that. So yeah, there's a big difference for me there.
John, how about you? Difference between aiming and holding changes between target archery and 3D archery.
3D, I just aim right at it. I put the arrow tip right where I want to hit.
Okay.
Good. Ben says, I was wondering if you lollipop or place over. I place over it, but it's difficult. So like on a feet of target, I want to hit the gold, but I don't place my arrow right over the gold. I place it over the six ring. So on a 3D target, I try to use the 10 ring, but they're all different sizes, especially distance and size of the animal. So it's a little different for me. But yeah, I try to place my arrow over it.
Do you do the same for field, Grayson?
For field, yeah, same thing. It's the field dots are a little easier with a smaller diameter arrow.
Mm-hmm. John, how about you? You're a lollipop for all field targets?
Yeah, pretty much. I shoot the same way.
Just so people know. Okay, good. And unless you guys got any direct messages, we kind of covered everything. There's lots of good comments. A lot of positive, you know, responses to people. There's one. So Ken Hogue came with a question. Says this, we'll probably make this the last one. How do you relax your bow hand to release your arrow? How do you relax your bow hand to release your arrow? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you mean relax your bow hand and relax your release hand. Or if you actually meant relax your release hand to release your arrow. Let's just talk about that in relationship to the aim. Let's talk about both of them. So your hook, when you're aiming, how do you describe the string coming through your fingers? You letting go of the string? Is the string pulling itself through your fingers? Or are you just letting go?
All right, I'll kind of start a little from the beginning. So the first thing I do is, you know, set my stance and make sure I'm, you know, pointed at the target. I'll crawl, and then I'll set my hook on the string and my grip. Grip first and then hook on the string. So the grip, I get it set, and it's just a loose grip. I don't hold on to the bow at all. I use at least with a bare bow, I use a finger sling. Long bow is a little different. It's a pain in the ass. I don't like messing with it. But bare bow, use a finger sling, so it's not a big deal. Just keep it loose, set it where you want it, where you put it every time, and then you move on. Grip on the string. I remember a video, this was from Jimmy Blackman, you know, however many years ago. It's like you're picking up a bucket in your hands, and you kind of keep your hand straight. I don't remember exactly how he said it, but that's kind of how I think of it. Try to keep the back of my hand flat like that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but try to do that. Mm-hmm. Not any tension in the fingers other than to hold the string.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm at full draw, I don't really think about the grip anymore. That's done. The string fingers are done. The only time I'll feel more tension in the fingers when I'm holding too long. Everything starts to tense up, and I'll feel it in the fingers as well.
Good. John, what do you think?
What was the original question? Was correlate the
release hand? He later commented, it's releasing. He's talking about the release hand. Like, how do you relax your fingers to actually let go of the string? How would you
with a semi deep hook, it's easy to keep your hand relaxed. If you shoot on the fingertips, this part of your hand gets way, way more stress in it. But if you hook deep, it's actually really easy to hold it. And this is actually really nice and loose.
On the fingertips too. I don't know how, but yeah, the deep hook makes it easy. And when I release, how to say it? If I were like a compound shooter, I would say I don't shoot compound this way, but bareboat, I would say like I'm a puncher. Like when I let it go, I'm letting it go. Chung, how would you say that? Same thing?
Yeah, it's kind of half and half where I'm opening my hand, but I'm also letting it go through my fingers. So I shoot pretty command.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I'm a command shooter, a puncher, however you want to say it.
I know if I get too like passive in it, this starts doing some really wacky stuff in the back. I won't have the direction I want it. And like, if I don't have the direction I want it, I'm not sending that string in that straight line that I want. If I get too passive, I'll start coming like way out in the face and come way out. And that string will start wandering a little bit when I release.
Good. I think you guys covered it 100%. Jared Mullis has a question. It's not really related to aiming, but it's actually a good question, so we're going to look at it. He said, do you find it beneficial to have a coach when available in the box, say at Lancaster, that knows you and your shot enough to evaluate your shot to execution? And if problems arise, at what point do you make a change or trust what that coach or buddy or whoever is telling you? I guess it depends on what you have there. I find it very easy to fix an issue once someone else confirms in your shot that you're feeling, or I think he's saying, am I alone? So I guess the notion of, you know, do you find it beneficial having someone there, and are they there for that purpose or what reasons? What's the benefit of having a coach in your corner in that capacity?
I would say it's beneficial to have a coach that you're somewhat close with that knows your shot a little bit. I don't know. For me, I know my shot. I know what I need to do, so I don't really need an outside party to really tell me unless I'm doing something blatantly wrong. Comfort. I mean, it's nice to look back and, you know, see somebody you know. Also, if I run low on time, it's nice to have somebody that'll read out to you like 5, 3, 2, 1, like that. In all reality, that's the biggest function of a coach for me, if I'm running low on time and comfort. Yeah. But I don't think a coach is going to be able to, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think a coach is going to be able to fix your problems in between shots on the stage. Like that's asking a lot of the coach. No. If you got a coach that can do that, I would like to hire him
or her. Yeah, right. I will say, Jared, in regards to that, that shooter is working at 100% capacity in that moment. There's nothing to fix at that time. Either they have it or they don't. But coaches can do other things. And John, why don't you talk to, because you have, out of probably everyone in Baraboo, maybe don't forgive me if I'm, you know, don't crucify me if there's somebody else you think, you probably have more experience than anyone in Baraboo, at least on the American side, in that type of situation. What are the things that you're looking for from a coach in some regards? Maybe Lancaster, maybe US Open, whatever. Where are the things that you need as a shooter in that capacity?
Maybe a little bit of positive reinforcement. That's about it. I'm like Grayson, like I know my shot. Unless I do something like I'm just completely blanking on something in my shot, I'd want that pointed out, but that usually doesn't happen. I would rather a person watch what I'm doing than where the arrow hits. Especially 100%. When Lancaster, if I could just look at the screen. I mean, the screen's right there. Maybe if we're shooting something really far and I can't see, mm-hmm. then I could say, you know, where did that go? But most of the time I want them watching me and not the target.
Or I do recall you in a coaching box for, I think it was Dillinger, the year he won. And I think you kind of like gave him a quick reminder about, hey, why don't you give it a couple of clicks on his plunger? And
yeah,
you remember
I was
that?
Watching, yeah, I was watching him and seeing what he was doing. And he was just hanging to the one side, probably because of the lighting. And he shoots, and I think he hit like an 8 or a 9. The first arrow and the second arrow kind of went in the same direction. I said, give that thing a couple clicks because your shot looks great. Mm. Like everything looks great, nice and tight. Everything feels good. Or everything looks good. If it feels good, move it.
Yeah. Well, maybe so in that moment, he just wasn't thinking, I'm going to move it. But you were able to pick up on that little that little thing. That's what a coach can do. You know,
I got yelled at by the photographer because I was getting in their way of their shot for watching him shoot. Because I was in the back watching, like I was kind of leaned over watching the release hand, see what he was doing back there.
Yeah. That's funny. And then there's the standard stuff. There's like handing, like, well, Lancaster's a little bit different because the stage is there. Like if you want to take a water bottle up with you, you can put it on, you can put it right there, but it takes time for you to, like, you have to put an arrow in, you have to do all this stuff. A coach can very simply, a very small task can be just give them a bottle of water, take the cap off, take a sip, take it back. Cause that's one thing you don't have to worry about doing, or you might forget to take a sip. If you're up there for 4 or 5 shooters in a row, you're going to need to drink. And it just calms you down for a second and stuff like that. But you might forget to take a drink. So there's definitely some benefits to having someone there that you trust, that might pick up on something or be able to kind of talk you off the ledge a little bit. But that's
I thought I saw one go through the saying that we're command shooters, then what's our trigger? This sight picture is never our trigger. It's more of, okay, we can let go anytime we want now and we just do it. It's not like it's got to go now. You know, I think Grayson shoots the same way. We get it. We float it. Okay. We can move on to a shot. Now we just make the best shot we can. Let's start it. And then we just start it and make the best follow through that we can.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero sight picture shooting.
I would agree. Yeah. So you aim, you move on. For me, it's the feeling on the fingers and in my back. If that feels good, I know I can just let this go. And I was like, all right, I'm letting it go. And that's that.
So there's definitely some level of, like, you know, the feeling and you focus, you're pursuing that same feeling every arrow there. That's sort of, not that that's the trigger, but it's like a motivator maybe, or it's a self check throughout the shot to be like, I know this is going to be good. So it's not a trigger that says let go now. It's just, it's like giving you permission to let go.
Maybe in a way, I don't know if permission is the right way to put it. I mean, I fight the same fight every shot because I want every shot to be executed well. So practice shots, you know, you get two ends of practice. I'm fighting those shots just the same as I am when they say, you know, scoring starts now. Every arrow for me, I'm striving to execute the shot well. I don't worry about, you know, oh, this one counts for score or anything like that. It's, I'm striving for the shot execution every time, and it's hard to do, so it takes all of my focus to execute it correctly. I don't really notice the drop off between the practice rounds or the practice ends and the scoring, because like I said, I'm fighting every shot the same way. Every shot is the most important shot.
Okay, good enough, guys. It's a long one. I think we got everything. If we missed your we missed your questions or whatever, I apologize. It's definitely, we've been on since 7 o'clock, some of us. So I think we covered everything, guys. Well, not you guys, but I was on with Amber doing a lesson. Brett said, ladies, glad I could join in late. That's your brother. Thanks, Brett. Nice to see you. Hopefully we see you at the classic. Is your brother shooting the classic? Oh, we don't know. You don't even know if you're
He is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think he's shooting some, I don't know, some compound stuff, whatever they do. I don't know.
Is he staying with us, ain't he?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm only going to be there for one day, so, or one, yeah, probably one day.
What day are you coming up, Frank?
I don't know yet. I have to look at the schedule and see what day makes sense. I mean, I may come, I'll probably be there at least 2 days, but yeah, no archery for me, but it is what it is. I'll survive. See an outdoor season.
I haven't signed up yet, so
well, you technically
I'm sure the only times left are like Thursday at midnight or whatever is the least desirable. So that's what I'll be doing. But
what insult were you gonna say?
Technically, you haven't showed up the last 2 years.
Oh, well, at least I know I showed up at least once. All right. Before this turns into a shit show, thank you everyone for joining. I'm gonna go through everyone who posted done. Double check that you've liked the Jaeger Facebook page and the Jaeger Instagram page. And I'm going to do a random generator. I'm going to find a winner who's going to win a free Jaeger Archery Products bare bow or, well, any grip that they have. You can get the one that Grayson uses, or you can get the one that John uses, or whatever you want. So make sure you go do those things and get entered for that giveaway from Jaeger Archery Products. And I'll make sure that gets posted shortly. For the rest of you, thank you so much. Gentlemen, thank you. It was a long one. I am going to go plow some snow, I think, with the four-wheeler. So you guys have a wonderful night. My dog's barking in the background. And thanks so much for joining us. See ya. Farewell Project out. All right, everybody. It's time to do the giveaway for Jaeger Archery Products. Thank you all who watched the live feed, shared it, did everything we asked you to do. Again, thank you all for your support. And don't forget, I'm going to be doing a lot more of this stuff throughout 2024. Patreon is definitely the place to be. That's where the bigger giveaways are at. I'm sure we'll be giving more Jaeger products out there, but Yost products, Yost weights, Yost tabs, XS wings. And this month, I'm giving away one, maybe two risers in 2024. And all you have to do is be a member of Patreon, state level and above, for the opportunity. So check that out. We're going to be doing more and more giveaways throughout the whole, just trying to give back to the community, trying to support our sponsors and supporters and partners and all that stuff, and just really try to continue to grow there about as much as we can. So anyway, let's get to it. Here we go. Time to find out who's going to win the free Jaeger Archery Products grip, custom grip. Here we go. Go on. Let this thing choose. Jeff Ogilvy. Congrats, Jeff. You won the free grip. Get your information. Get that over to Paul and Paul Jaeger, and we'll get you squared away. Thanks so much, everyone, for the support.